From the Meridian Manufacturing Studios, you're listening to Inside Agriculture on 910 Classic Country, KCJV in Minot, as well as Ag News 890 and Farm News in Real Country, Thunder 106.1 in Lisbon and Fargo, North Dakota. Well, if not TPP, then what? That's the question the Washington Post asked in a weekend editorial challenging opponents to the Trans-Pacific Partnership to come up with a suitable trade deal replacement to help keep the peace in Asia and the Pacific. Now, the Post challenges TPP critics in the face of what it calls the remote prospect a lame duck Congress will heed President Barack Obama's call to pass the measure trade deal. It's viewed as a hedge against Chinese expansionism. Now, what's your alternative? Well, the paper asks that question, but argues the issue is more difficult for Hillary Clinton than Donald Trump, especially since it says Clinton changed her stance under pressure from Senator Bernie Sanders, and China failed to moderate its behavior as a new World Trade Organization member during President Bill Clinton's tenure. The Obama administration's U.S. Trade Ambassador Michael Froman urges TPP passage as a counterweight to China.
And we don't want the rules of the road to be set by other countries who may not share our interests and our values. So there's a lot here at stake economically as well as strategically.
Froman made this point in an earlier conference call with the National Cattlemen's Beef Association.
These countries want us to be involved in their lives. They want our engagement. And as Pacific power, we want to be engaged. It's a key part of our rebalancing strategy towards Asia that Secretary Kerry spoke so eloquently of in Los Angeles, and Secretary Carter, Defense Secretary Carter did in New York. TPP is a critical component of that.
The Post editorial concludes that TPP past tense was supposed to be the anchor of a reinvigorated U.S. presence, adding the next president cannot simply leave a strategic vacuum in place. While trade negotiators from Vietnam say the TPP trade agreement's not open to renegotiation, pushing back against calls from select U.S. politicians that say the deal needs amended to their liking. Bloomberg reports a Vietnam trade official said the agreement strikes the best possible balance among the interests of the deal's 12 members. Amid election year politics, several lawmakers in Washington have said they'll vote no against the TPP. Further, both candidates for president have taken stabs against the trade deal, putting approval in jeopardy. We'll be back with the Pro Farmer Crop Tour right after this. From the Meridian Manufacturing Studios, you're listening to Inside Agriculture. Well, after day one of the 2016 Pro Farmer Midwest Crop Tour, 10 teams of scouts, a total of 40 of them, met in Fishers, Indiana to discuss what they found on the fields of western Ohio and eastern Indiana. The final numbers for Ohio were released as well. Corn yields came in at 148.96, and soybeans, which are measured by the number of pods in 3 foot by 3 foot squares, were figured out to be 1,055.05. Brian Bush is a field agronomist with DuPont Pioneer, covering south and central Indiana. He says although his territory kept the rain gauges filled this year, there can be too much of a good thing.
We've been blessed with rain, kind of limit us in the spring on how early we could get out. Probably only about 20% of my acres got planted in April. Then the majority of it got planted Memorial Day and after. So kind of that blessing and curse. But as long as we keep the diseases in check, keep our corn pollinating, we've got some cooler weather now. So the cooler weather is going to definitely help with grain fill, help us protect what's out there. But we're keeping our fingers crossed.
And definitely, Pro Farmer Crop Tour scouts were talking about finding fields with ears that had poor pollination and ears that pollinated but are now beginning to tip back, which Booth says is hard to account for.
Tip back is that tough one. You know, on one hand, it's nice that the corn plant doesn't die completely, because if the whole ear dies, the whole plant dies, you lose a lot more yield that way. So cutting back on tip back, it's going to take some off that top end. But it's tough to say how much it's really going to cut off. But definitely, we all know high daytime temperatures, high nighttime temperatures, the plant wastes so much energy it collected during the day just to cool itself, respire. And that's energy that should be going to the ear.
As for the soybeans, Bush says they may be a saving grace for some farmers in the eastern Corn Belt.
Not like 3 foot tall, like 4 feet, even 5 feet in some cases. So tall soybeans potted pretty well. You'll find the field that has the four bean pods, but then you also find some that have the two bean pods. So as long as we get good rainfall from here forward, fill out those pods and get nice big soybean size, that can help us with the yield. With the rain we had here for the last 10 days, I had some of those 4 foot tall soybeans that are now 18 inches tall. So a little bit of a challenge for harvest, but take the good with the bad.
And day two of the Pro Farmer Eastern Tour goes from Fishers, Indiana to Bloomington, Illinois. And you can ride right along with the scouts all this week. And, of course, we'll check out the Western Tour. Pearl Farmer's South Dakota corn yield estimates came out 9.7% lower than last year. Pearl Farmer released South Dakota results last night in Grand Island, Nebraska. Corn yields were estimated at 149 bushels per acre. Chip Flory with Pro Farmer is the guide for that tour. He was disappointed in the corn that he saw.
A lot of issues with the South Dakota corn crop. They went through that June-July period where a lot of areas picked up, you know, somewhere around an inch of rain in June and July combined. And then early August, I think it was August 1, they picked up about 2.5 inches across a good chunk of the tour area.
Flory says those numbers are lower than last year.
A year ago, we measured 166 bushels per acre. So this year, we're down about 9.7% from a year ago. Now, look, we've got to compare that to what USDA is seeing for the crop, too. And USDA, a year ago, had that crop at 159 bushels per acre. As of August 1, 147. That's down 7.5%.
Soybean pod count for South Dakota averaged 970, lower than last year as well.
But when everything was said and done in the state, we were down 8% on our pod counts. USDA on August 1 went from 46 bushels per acre last year down to 42 bushels per acre this year. That's an 8.7% decline. You know, if we're going to line up the pod counts and the yields, I think we're looking at a very similar crop as what USDA saw on August 1.
Dan, today, scouts will make their way south from Grand Island to Nebraska City. You can follow day two of the tour online at ProFarmer.com. You can also keep track of the progress on Twitter with hashtag PFTour16. Okay. We're going to take a break here, but when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about atrazine. Farmers, get to work. Need to get a hold of those congressmen. We'll talk about that next. From the Meridian Manufacturing Studios, you're listening to Inside Agriculture. Well, the Colorado Corn Growers Association says the Environmental Protection Agency proposal to reduce atrazine impacts more than farmers. The association's communications director, Eric Brown, says non-users of atrazine are siding with corn farmers who say science proves the product is safe. Brown says if the EPA proposal's approved, the move could have implications on other products deemed safe as well.
If it's a proven safe product, you know, time and time again proven by scientific studies that it is effective, that it is a safe product, then let the producer use it, even if I don't use it on my farm. And again, even we've had some general consumers out on these district meetings and folks who have called us wanting to help in this effort just because, you know, even though they're not even farmers, they say, hey, we trust the farmer. If it's a proven safe product, the farmer use what he needs to do to grow a safe, affordable, and efficient food supply.
The EPA proposal comment period is open until October 4th. Farmers can submit comments online at fightepa.com. While the evolution of genetic progress within the beef cattle industry continues to develop at a rapid pace, Bob Severa has more in this report.
While predictions for traits such as carcass quality and marbling have improved, there's still potential for improvement, especially for the overall beef business. Keith Belk, a meat scientist with Colorado State University, says the Angus breed has made great strides toward improving end product merit, and more opportunity lies ahead.
In some characteristics, we do really well at making genetic progress, and others we don't do so well, marbling being one of them. I think the only way that we've made a lot of progress in marbling as an industry, as a complete industry, is we've turned cattle black. But moving forward, we need to do what certified Angus beef and other branded beef programs have done, and we need to extend that across the entire industry if we're truly to remain competitive.
Belk also says making industry-wide changes toward meat quality and marbling requires using innovative science and technology. His research looks beyond the animal and its genetics to the surrounding environment and how microorganisms could potentially impact meat tenderness and flavor.
I think that the change you're going to see in the availability of genetic selection tools will be the same kind of change we saw when we went from not having computers to having computers. That's the type of change we're going to see, the transformation that's going to occur. And so I'm excited about it. We just have a lot to learn about it yet.
I'm Bob Cervera.
And we'll take another break here. But when we come back, if you've got insects that infest your soybean fields, or if your crop's suffering from maybe a potassium deficiency, you can address that. But what do you do with weather-related problems? Well, we're going to come back and discuss that right after this. Well, as we wrap up what's going on inside agriculture from the Meridian Manufacturing Studios, as we mentioned before we took the break, if insects infest your soybean fields or if your crop's suffering from potassium deficiency, you can correct that for the future. Now, if your fields aren't getting enough rain or are facing other weather-related issues or stresses, you have much less of an ability to respond.
In those cases where you don't have management options, the best thing to turn to is getting better genetics into the soybean and using that to control the problem of drought, heat, or flood.
That was U.S. Department of Agriculture Research Service geneticist Tommy Carter. As part of a Soy Checkoff-funded research project, Carter's turning to soybean genes not commonly used in U.S. varieties to help your fields weather the elements. Through their work, researchers stumbled upon a soybean cultivar known as Fiscabee and hit the genetic lottery. Fiscabee was developed in Sweden in the mid-20th century to be used in cooler climates. Here in the United States, with a warmer growing season, however, ARS plant physiologist Kent Berkey says very few lines use Fiscabee's beneficial genes.
You rarely find it in U.S. cultivars. And what that means is that it's a source of stress tolerance genes that probably hasn't been integrated into U.S. cultivars to the extent that it could be.
And, of course, breeding for Fiscabee's positive traits, but not the negative ones, such as its early maturity and short stature, will be difficult. But Berkey says it's worth the effort given Fiscabee's ability to tolerate stresses such as cold, heat, ozone, and salt.
Fiscabee is an amazing plant. I mean, we don't know of any other examples of a single genotype that has stress tolerances to all these different stresses. It's very impressive and very unusual. It's a great opportunity for us to look at these things all in one package.
And if you want to learn more about checkoff-funded research that can help maximize farmer profitability, you can visit unitedsoybean.org. Well, the U.S. Committee on Foreign Investment in the United States has given its approval to the ChemChina takeover of Syngenta. Reuters says the decision removes significant uncertainty over the takeover of the world's largest pesticides maker after the two companies agreed to a deal in February. However, Syngenta did not disclose whether it made concessions to secure approval. If completed, the $43 billion takeover would be the largest foreign acquisition ever by a Chinese company. Syngenta reiterated the company expects to finalize the deal by the end of the year. Syngenta says closing the transaction is still subject to antitrust review by numerous regulators around the world, and other customary closing conditions. Well, that's what's going on inside agriculture. From the Meridian Manufacturing Studios, we'll catch you here again tomorrow. I'm Farm Director Terry Loomis.